As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years, a new on-location episode today. First time ever, Colton, in the... Who is this named after now? The Lions recording
room. This is Jeremy's room.
Jeremy's room. Okay, so.
He won the media competition, the combine.
In the summer, right?
Yep.
So we're in the Reisman recording room. Used to be the Tim Twentyman recording room. Which is, I can see still some Tim signs in here, including one upside down on the door. Of course, I'm at practice today. We're going to be doing some interviews along with Colton, and we figured we'd record here. So Colton, of course, back from a long weekend in L.A., and what did you say, you took a red-eye back Monday night? How are we doing here?
I did. I caught up on some sleep yesterday, so I'm doing a lot better now. that was rough, though. Me and Ben Raven, shout out Ben, we had the same flight back.
Oh, really?
It's 10 p.m. L.A. time. We landed at, like, 5:30 Detroit, and immediately went to bed for another 5 hours. Did not get any sleep on the plane because the drink cart, for some reason, went by, like, 6 times.
Yeah.
On a red eye, in the middle of the night, and woke everyone up. It was like bumping my shoulder. I had an aisle seat. So we're back now. We're well rested and back at it.
I love it. The drink cart, and then like I think the first time I ever flew a red eye, a guy in front of me watched a movie the whole way. Kept watching movies and the
probably
light.
No headphones.
And I was like, what are we doing? It's like 5 in the morning or whatever the hell time it is.
Yeah.
But yes, any event, back from a long week there. But I mean, for the Lions, of course. I mean, Campbell actually joked a little bit today about how he's not exhausted. The reporters are actually exhausted because you do have a quick turnaround here, and it was a West Coast game later in the day on Eastern time anyway, but most important, I think, it was an exhausting game, right, Colton? I mean, it was a draining game. We talked about that night that it happened, and then again since, that it was one of the better, more entertaining back-and-forth games of the year, and frankly, a game I don't think that the Lions would have won or come close to winning in the last couple of years. So, I mean, your thoughts on that? You were there, so your thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, that was a game where, you know, as it's kind of going playing out the way it did, you felt good, I think, in the first half, and then just weren't really sure kind of as it progressed. You know, the Chargers were making a comeback, and, you know, could already feel the same old line sweets coming my way, and
right.
Kind of one of those games. But, you know, when it came down to the wire, you know, I think you could have confidence in the Lions just based on what they've shown this season. We talked about it last week. Like, something's got to give, right? The Lions history versus the Chargers charging, you know?
Exactly what happened.
At the end of this game, like, you had to wonder, like, which side was going to give. And it was the Lions. It was Dan Campbell. It was the decision-making down the stretch that really propelled them to this win in a tight game. You're going to have games like that where the defense doesn't have it. And Campbell said if we lost that game, it would have been on the offense, not the defense, because the way it was going, we needed the offense to come through. And that's exactly what they did down the stretch. They were making every play that they needed to make. And that was sort of, the end stretch that they had, and that kind of propelled them to this win, I think.
Yeah, it's really one of those where it goes, you know, feather in the cap for Jared Goff and a lot of other people too, but it's also one where, you know, I don't know how to explain it, and it's so weird because we've seen these guys play this way, you know, now for a year and a half, whatever it's been. Everyone knows the record over the last 16 games, whatever, you know, that is. I think it is 12-4 or something like this, whatever it ends
something
up being.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, really good over that year. So everybody gets, we've seen performances like this before, but this was still for some reason, maybe it's because it's on the road, maybe it's because it's on the West Coast, maybe it's because they were playing well, the Chargers, you know, all these things, like, these are games that, I want to say the Lions, but, like, also teams that aren't really there, they lose all the time. You never win this game because you're out of your comfort zone. You're three time zones over. You're playing against a quarterback who gets on a heater at the drop of a hat and can just sling it, right? And there's no, you know, there's no rhyme or reason for when he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And in order to sort of get through a day like that, when the defense is sort of just like, whatever, there's nothing we can do. He's making some throws that are just, your offense has to have an answer every single time. And the question has been, for the Lions, I think in my head, the way they play, you know, the run game, and it dictates that you go a certain pace. You're sort of, you're trying to grind somebody out and then take over after a while. The way that this game was going, it was back and forth with the arms, and it was some of that stuff that we've seen shootout-wise from Goff back in the day that we hadn't seen for several years, a couple moments here and there. But this was really one, to me, where that was a Jared Goff win, right? To me, as much as anything, because they got up, the Chargers make their comeback, they make their run several times, and Detroit never, they had some hiccups, but never bad enough to where it was like you've given up your advantage. They stayed right on top of them the whole way. And if you don't have a quality quarterback, you can't do that.
Yep.
That, to me, is the sign of a team going completely in the right direction. I don't know what your thoughts on that part of it was.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point to bring up Jared Goff's impact in this game. Because, look, we've seen, like, the Lions getting these shootouts before a couple times against the Seahawks in recent years. And usually sometimes in these games, like, yeah, they offer the scoring points, but Jared Goff has, like, a costly mistake, whether it's a pick six or a fumble or something that kind of stops the run before they get a chance to all the way come back or something like that, you know. So in this game, he was awesome. He didn't turn the ball over. Was 23 of 33, 333 and two touchdowns. Was making every throw he needed to make. Was finding his guys in space, in stride. Just some really nice throws. I thought the pass to Brock Wright was great. Great touch.
That was really good.
Yeah, so you're looking at him and the way he's coming through and making these plays, and you need a quarterback like that sometimes when your defense doesn't have it, you know, this defense has kind of shown over sometimes, like, they don't have it all the time. There are times where they can win you some games, like,
but also,
sometimes where they can almost give it up if your offense isn't playing the way that they need to play. And so credit to Jared Goff, credit to Ben Johnson for the way that he was kind of dialing things up. I mean, those two, I think, are part of the reason, and Campbell as well for his decision making. But I think Goff has a big say in this game. Absolutely. And a big reason why they came out and won ultimately.
And the reason why they got out in front, obviously, of course, more than anything, is the run game. When we talk about that to start, really, because it was in so many ways, it's not. I don't want to say it was a coming out party for Gibbs because we've already seen him do this locally. But I do think nationally this was a coming out party for him because this was the CBS national game, the Nance, Tony Romo game.
Yep.
Romo drooled over the Lions the entire broadcast.
I heard about that, yeah.
I mean, you were at the game, so you wouldn't know. It, like, you know, he played with Dan Campbell, of course. Like, they were, I think Romo was a rookie in Campbell's first or second year with the Cowboys, and he was only there for a couple years. But Dan was a leader on that team, of course. Parcells was the coach. Highly respected, as everyone knows. And Romo and Campbell are buds, you know, because Campbell's buds with every single person he's ever played with. So, yeah, Romo was like, they're not going to lose two more games the rest of the year, maybe three more. You know, they're a four-loss team, no matter what. You know, they're going to this playoffs, absolutely. They're a Super Bowl, you know, caliber team, all this. And that sort of slowed down as the Chargers started to make their comeback. But, like, the reason why he was ramping himself up is because they just kept gashing them on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's like this offensive line was finally healthy. And I know today Jonah Jackson was not there at practice, and I guess we'll see what that means. But they were finally healthy. Both backs were back there, and it was just a thrashing on the ground, Colton. I mean, like, it wasn't just the Montgomery 75-yard touchdown run or just the one where Gibbs cuts back. It was all sorts of stuff all game long. The fourth and five or six that they ran it on.
How about that?
Are you kidding me right now? Like, this was Dan Campbell. We've said this several times, I feel like, and the Monday night game was not quite that because they didn't have the performance probably the way that they would have liked.
Yeah.
This was that to me. This was them showing everybody, like, and I know the Chargers are the Chargers. It's not the Eagles, but it's like, this is what it's going to take to beat us if you're going to do it come winning time.
I think Dan said after the game, this was the vision with the run game.
Right.
Everything kind of came together. They had their starting five together intact for the first time in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The two backs were together out there. It wasn't just one or the other. And that was the sort of effort that you've been waiting to see.
Exactly.
We've seen it a little bit, but it's like Gibbs was on. Montgomery was on. Like, the offensive line was just powering their way through this Chargers front, which has some talent. Like, you know, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack and some of these other players are out there. Those are good players to go against. And the Lions' offensive line just neutralized that group out there. So when you're watching this and you're seeing Gibbs go off and you're seeing Montgomery run for 75 yards and J-Mo blocking downfield for him, you're just like, this is the vision. This is how good this offense can be when they're clicking, when they're firing on all cylinders, the run game in particular. Like, to go for it on 4th and 5 and get a 6-yard gain, that's just, that's like, crazy. We're better than you, that's, and we know it, and we're going to run it down your throat, and you can't do anything to stop it. And that's just how it played out. The offense just kind of had its way, and, I mean, man, what an effort.
I think Romo actually said the same thing when they went for it on the goal line down there, and they scored earlier in the game.
Okay.
They went for it on 4th down, maybe after that, 4th and 6, but it was like...
Gibbs scored.
Yeah, he was like, this is just really who Campbell is as a coach. Like, you know, it's 4th and 2, it's a long 2, but whatever. We're just going to jam it in here right now, and you know it's coming, and we don't care because we're better than you.
Yep.
That's just how it's going to go. And, like, that's how the first half was played. And the thing that I really liked the most about it, because we talked about this last week going into that game, was you have Gibbs and you have Montgomery back healthy. They're ready to go. You got the full complement of each. And so how are you going to handle them? And, you know, we'd seen in previous weeks, earlier in the season, Montgomery starts the game. And in some cases, he would get the first couple series, maybe. Some cases, they would split a series. But it felt like, to me, usually you'd have to get deep into the quarter before we saw Gibbs. And in this game, it almost felt like it was every other.
Yeah.
It was like, and I think it stayed that way for quite a while. It wasn't like every other until somebody got the hot hand and they just let that guy go. No. It was every other, and it just stayed like that. And they kept pushing each other, you know, because Gibbs was the one who... I think at the end of the first quarter, he had like almost 100 yards of offense.
Yep.
And then you look at Montgomery like, oh, maybe this isn't going to be his day. And then he has a 75 yard. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And I think that if there's internal competition between those two that they're going to try to, that they want to one up each other, then you're going to try to give it an even split as best you can. I thought that was perfect. I thought it was the way they had that, because if you can put them both out there separately, I still think that more together at the same time would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no tell. There's no like, Montgomery's in, they're going to run more gap, or Gibbs is going to run more zone. No, like, you don't know what the hell they're going to do. It could be anything coming at you. I really like that. That was almost, in some ways, I don't want to say it's surprising, but it was to me, like, almost surprising that I had no notes on that one.
Yeah.
It was like, I got no complaints. It was almost perfect how they handled those two.
No doubt. I agree wholeheartedly. And that was a question coming into the week, how they would handle those two backs healthy at the same time. Again, we talk about the fantasy community a lot, but they were kind of like,
it's going to be
Montgomery, Gibbs, we'll never see him again. It's like, no, like there's room for both of these backs to feed and eat in this offense.
Right.
And, you know, we saw it in that game. I think Montgomery had 116 yards on 12 carries.
Which is a good number for him.
It's a great number.
Yeah.
Because normally he's averaging around like, 4 yards a carry.
I like that.
12 carries for 116. Like, he made the most with that 75-yard run, but... and then Gibbs had 14 for 77, two touchdowns. So 200 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns on the ground. Like, that's the sort of effort they can put together when everything's clicking together. So love that outing. Love the fact that they were feeding those two guys, and really good day for them.
And this, Golden, you talked about this, or you wrote about this right after the game. I thought it was really good. If people haven't read that, go back and check it out. Because it not only did we just talk about how the Lions are introducing themselves and who they are to a national audience, And I think a lot of people by now nationally know who Dan Campbell is, and they know that he's more than the knee-biting guy, right? I think that bridge has been crossed. But they don't know, or they didn't know, what we saw from them on Sunday. Because a lot of people here, I still think, give it all to Ben Johnson. And I don't think that's fair. And I think Ben Johnson's a terrific offensive coordinator, will be a really good head coach and all that. But, like, Campbell was the one who put him there, and Campbell's the one who said, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to draft it, and like, this is how we're going to build our run game. And Johnson presses the right buttons and builds the whole thing together. But to me, this was them, and the sideline calls and the decisions that he made in the moment signified a guy who's grown a ton right along with his roster, and they're just like in sync together, are they not? Like, they play the way he coaches and vice versa, and they have each other's back the whole way through. It's really, really cool thing to see.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, naturally, when you put up 500 yards of offense and 41 points, like, a lot of people are going to say, oh, Ben Johnson, you know, that's a great game that he called. And
saved us, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But to me, I'm watching that game, I'm like, this is a Dan Campbell game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can point to a lot of people and say it's that person's game, Jared Goff, the running backs, the offensive line, Ben Johnson.
That's why it's a Campbell game, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a Campbell game because of the collective effort from everyone. And Dan Campbell, his fingerprints at the end there, I think, and really not just the end. He was going for it on 4th down throughout the game routinely. I would turn over to Jeremy, who was sitting next to me in the press box, and I'm like, I think they should go for it here on like a 4th and 5.
Yeah.
And they did, and they got it, you know. They kept going for it and didn't get the touchdown, but they come back in the very next drive. They have a 4th and 1, and they give it to Gibbs. I think they ran off Sewell and got the touchdown.
Yeah.
And it's like, if another coach got stopped on fourth down, like, they might be hesitant to do it again. Dan Campbell's like, nope, we're going to go right back at it, and we're going to score, and we're going to run down your throat. And, like, that's the difference, I think. And even in that late-game scenario, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you have to go for it there. The analytics say kick the field goal on that fourth and two. You go up, you try to hope your defense is going to stop, and you gather with the win with, I think, a minute and 40-plus.
Correct.
But Campbell has this really good sense, I think. It's not just following the analytics or, you know, choosing when to go against it. It's, like, the feel for the game that he has as a head coach, I think, is what separates him from a guy like Brandon Staley on the other sideline who probably just goes for it, whatever the math says, you know?
Yep.
And I think with what Campbell said in that situation probably to himself was, hey, our defense is kind of reeling. The Chargers had scored five straight touchdowns, I think. Justin Herbert was just, you know, torching them.
Right.
And just one of those days, you don't have it. So how can we win this game with our strengths instead of trying to put ourselves
back in? Yeah. Right.
So I think he kind of determined that, hey, we have one of the better offensive lines in football that's dominating this game, right? They're going to protect Goff, or they're going to run it if we need 2 yards. You know, Goff is kind of eaten on the secondary.
Right,
so, like, we only need 2 yards. Let's get 2 yards and let's end this thing, you know?
Get out of here.
Let's get out of here with the win. We'll escape, and then we'll sleep good on the plane ride home, right?
Right.
And that's exactly what they did. And Goff was going through his progressions on that play, came back and found Laporta for 2 yards. You pick up the first, you run down the clock, and then you kick a field goal with 2 seconds left. And you trust your kicker, Riley Patterson, in his range to get that kick. He got it, and you go home with the W there. So I think I don't know. I think people are saying, oh, of course they should have done it. But I don't know how many coaches would have done that in that scenario, to be honest with you.
No, yeah. I mean, especially if they already missed one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think, yeah, like you're saying, though, it's like it's literally how they play the game. It's just how they do things. It's not a matter of, well, if we can't do it then when are we ever going to – then what are we even doing here? If we're not going to try – you know, then our whole philosophy of how we're playing is just busted and not even really a thing. I think that the thing that you said about the feel is really the whole thing because – I talk so much about how him and Aaron Glenn both are guilty of this, of coaching how they used to play, and you can't always just take something to a situation and break it, you know, like when it's just like you can on a field, that sometimes you have to sort of feel things out and let them come to you and then know when the moment is to go after somebody and go after the throat, and that's what you're describing there, because there's been this, like, in the last 10 years, and it's going away, it's been going away for the last five, but Belichick's rise brought about the idea and the notion that most football games are lost and not won, that you know, you win more of them by just being, you know,
playing
steady
mistake free ball
and just not doing anything crazy and just getting out of there. And, you know, for a long time, that's 100% that was the case.
Sure.
And teams started getting smarter and that stopped happening. The point is that it's okay to go try to win a game. It's okay to go try to finish it off. And it's okay to know when your guys have the drop on their guys in a situation, and that's exactly what that was. Like, you nailed it. It's, we're not getting a stop on them, all things considered. Anyway, he's making these throws. We can't bet on that. So, whatever. We're not going to take that personal and be whiny about that over here.
Right.
But at the same time, they can't stop anything we run off of right tackle, left tackle, whatever. And it's fourth and two. Why would we do anything but go for it here? You know, like, that's, it's okay to have faith in what you're doing. And I think that's, Campbell's always had, like, some ways it's been too much faith. It's been like, you know, in some cases in the past, you can think back to games in his first year. This happened a lot in the first year where he would make those, they'd miss one, and he would do it again, and they'd miss it, and he'd do it again, and they would miss it. It would just be like, why, you know?
So,
and there was a little bit of wobbly, but yeah, I think he stayed with that, and it's, you've seen it grow. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, so we should talk about the differences between like 2 years ago and now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think 2 years ago, they almost, I bet Campbell almost felt he had to steal some possessions.
Yeah, all the time.
And,
yeah, that, you know, Rams game was the great example.
Yeah.
The first one was Stafford.
Yeah, because they didn't have the talent. It was a little different back then.
Like
they're
four onside kicks or whatever it was.
Probably a little too risky back then, but that's something that comes with time. And I think people kind of look at coaching decisions, and I think some people say you either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
I think it can come with time. And it can, more so than time, it comes with better talent. And, like, that comes
100%,
with time.
Yeah.
And so, like, when they didn't have it 2 years ago, and they're failing in these attempts, that doesn't mean it was, like, the wrong decision. It could have just been, like, we just didn't execute because we don't have the players we need. And now you look at them, and they have this offensive line. They have a quarterback that's so confident right now and the playmakers in space that they should be going for it more often than not because they have the talent to overpower other teams now that they didn't have 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the difference, too. And Campbell's learned from his mistakes. You know, the Vikings game where they had a chance to, you know, it was a 4th-and-4. They didn't go for it.
Right.
They could have ended the game with the first down. They kicked the field goal, missed it. The Vikings go down and score on a defense that didn't have it that day.
Yeah.
So I'm as this Chargers game is playing out, I'm thinking back to the Vikings game. And even in that, before they decide to go for it on 4th-and-2, I'm like, they should probably go for this because they didn't go for it last time, and that's what happened.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
You learn from your mistakes. You grow with time. And I think that's what Campbell's done. That's why I decided to focus on him for the story because, you know, he's propelled himself into this Coach of the Year category with decisions like that, with the growth that you see on display, with the better talent. And he knows what he has at his disposal, and he's making the most of it and now getting the best out of that group because those guys love being in those positions. I talked to Taylor Decker after the game.
Oh, my God, I know.
He says, it just makes us more confident as players, you know. When your coach believes in you and you know that he believes in you, whatever the analytics or percentages say, he's like, no, we're going to go out there and we're going to win this game. And we love that. So that's
couldn't agree more.
That's Campbell. That's Campbell to a T.
I'm going to dispel a myth here a little bit.
Yeah, let's do
There's this myth that, not with the line specific, it's just a football myth. There's this myth in games sometimes where a coach will say, maybe it's not a myth, it's the wrong word, where that'll happen, right, and the coach will make the conservative decision, and he'll say, well, we trust our defense to get us out of that.
Yeah.
We trust our defense to fix it for us. We're not going to do anything crazy or stupid. And you know what? In 1970, 1980, whatever, that was fine. That today is like the biggest cowardly excuse.
It's a cop-out.
And the defense also knows it. Like, that's the difference today. Is, I mean, you probably could have gotten away with, like, 10, 20 years ago being like, yeah, we run. Like, Iowa probably gets away with it, right, in college. But, like, you know, you're just – I think the defense even understands, like, if you're talking – if you're standing on the sideline there, 4th-and-2, and you go up to Tracy Walker, let's say, and it's like, Tracy, Justin Herbert's just thrown 450 yards on you. It's 4th-and-2. Would you prefer, Dan, kick the field goal here and keep this thing going or just win the game? Like, let's just win this fucking game.
I don't know. Let's win it.
Like, let's go. And, like, if he punts this here or whatever, we're going to be like, oh, God, like, what? Like, that is the reaction that your players have. And, like, that was something Patricia never got. Like, that was one of the million things they never got. But, like, that's one right there. When they would do those, like, what are you doing? Why are you just giving up like that? When it was like, well, strategically, it actually does by 1% make sense. It's like, none of your guys care.
Yeah.
So do what, you know, and that's the whole feel, read the room, and understand the moment. And more than that, understand where you are in the game, where exactly you are, when you can make that decision. And I thought this was the best example to date of Campbell keeping the pressure on the other guy.
Yes.
The whole way. Like, Staley was, and Staley, I thought, actually coached a pretty good game, all things considered. It has not been his best year. All things to get back in it. I thought they did a nice job to get back in it. But, you know, I think that if you're Campbell, you sense that, you know that he's maybe up against it, and you want to keep that on him the whole way. Make him blink. And to me, that's pretty much what happened, right?
I know.
The difference in who played better that day was microscopic. It was just he made better decisions and they won the game. And that's the first time I think we've said that, is it not?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And it's like,
in a game like that,
I was watching on like my YouTube TV feed during the game because they show like different angles that we don't always see from the press box.
That's where I like it at home.
And they show before the Lions went for it on 4th-and-2, they're showing Herbert, and he's got his helmet on his forehead, just like waiting to get back out there. Keenan Allen's got his hands like resting inside his shoulder pads, and he's just like itching to get back on the field.
I know what you're talking about.
It's the exact same scene. Yep. And I'm watching that, and I'm just like, that's why they're going for it, because they see those two dudes that have been torturing them all game, ready and itching to get back out there. And so you have a chance to stop those dudes from having a chance to beat you. That, to me, was like the difference. You know, we have our guys. We're going to run it down your throat. We're going to pass it. You know, whatever. We feel confident no matter what play we draw up, we're going to get this first down. We're going to end the game. We're going to win it.
Yeah.
And you're just going to be left demoralized on your own sideline in your own building. And that's what happened.
Because you can see they cut to Keenan right after the play, and he was like, whatever. Yeah. He like waved his hand and was like, screw this. And like just left. And it was like, okay, that's a game. But that's 100%. If you have the chance to do it, step on their throat and do it. That's the first time I think we've seen that. You flip it around, though, and I would talk about the defense here before we go into the next game, because, you know, there are still issues. And, I mean, as well as Herbert played, or some of the throws that he made were, you know, only he's making those, and I'm not sure you can count on that every week. I know you can't, but at the same time, like, they didn't add a corner at the deadline, and I am still wondering if this isn't, you know, I don't know how sustainable playing like this is when you're playing against a team with a good, like we talked about that last week, like it's super important that they get a bye, or not a bye, but a home game against somebody who's not got a great quarterback, preferably.
The 2C versus 17,
Yeah, because like when you're playing a good quarterback, when you don't have enough ammo back there, and they don't, this is what happens. And it was like that game should not have been that close. As hard as they played and as great of a win as it was, they should have blown them out. Yep. I think that's the other takeaway, right?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it felt like they had chances to pull ahead, and like
yeah, a few times,
so many times in that game that they just let the Chargers get back in and give them confidence and get a quarterback like Justin Herbert going, and all of a sudden you got a ball game there. So I do have concerns about this defense, yeah. And you know, we might not see them too much the rest of the regular season because you look at the quarterbacks they play; it's
right,
not
it
a great
now.
Slate.
Yeah. That's why this game was so big.
Yeah, I mean. So, but I've looked at, I'm working on a story for later this week, just kind of about the quarterbacks that they played so far. So they've taken care of business against guys like
some
Baker Mayfield and some other quarterbacks, but like they have struggled against the better quarterbacks on their schedule.
Right. Yep.
Lamar Jackson, in terms of EPA per play, had his highest of the season. Herbert had his highest of the season. Geno tied for his highest of the season. You know, even Bryce Young had his highest of the season. Bryce Young
does
not look great against other teams.
No, he's not.
So they've allowed some quarterbacks to have their best performances of the season against the Lions defense. And so I kind of wonder, when you get to the playoffs and you're facing guys that are in that upper echelon,
yeah.
You know, how are you going to handle those? We might not see them be tested too many times. I think the only quarterback that ranks in the top 10 right now in EPA per play that they'll see the rest of the season is Dak,
mm-hmm.
who's fourth.
Christmas time.
And that's not until New Year's. So they're going to have an easy stretch here. They might not be tested too much, but I do wonder, you know, down the road, I think it's fair to start looking ahead, right? Like they're 7-2, second in the NFC, leading the NFC North. We got to start thinking ahead to, like, how are they going to handle some of these teams in the future that they'll see? The Eagles, the 49ers.
Right.
I think Brock Purdy's first in the EPA per play. Jalen Hurts is, like, eighth. Dak is fourth. Geno's, like, 13th. So they're going to face some quarterbacks that are capable of torching them and tearing them apart, as we've seen. And if they're not on top of their game, they can get got. So that's sort of what I'm looking ahead to and a story I'm working on for later.
Yeah, they played pretty well against the run. I mean, I can't really
for
say
sure.
much about that. It's been like, and that's been able to hold up throughout. And I can't really blame too much other than the injuries that has put them in this spot. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you could have added a guy at the deadline. I hate to keep hammering on this. They just added Irvin. Up front on the edge, and maybe that's the solution that they're looking for, is like, okay, let's see if we can load up more up front. They also added, I saw Michael Schofield, the old Michigan guy, which is taking me back to like 100 years ago, it feels like. to the practice squad. So, like, just, I mean, you're trying to shoulder or shore up your fronts, for the stretch run. I get that.
Yeah.
And maybe if you can get more pressure on the quarterback, it helps those guys on the back, too. But for me, it's still, like, the missing piece here is still, and the thing that is in my mind rattling around, like, how is this season going to end for them? In my head, it's like it's going to end because they're going to give up 480 yards to some quarterback who's either he's good enough to do that or he's not. It's going to happen, and it's going to be one completion too many, and it's going to spoil, a 45-point effort or something. Like, that's how the season's going to be. That's what my is in the – I don't know if that's a premonition. I'm just saying like, that's the fear that I still have for them, and I don't know what they can do in the immediate to really – other than play better to get rid of that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean – they play. I know sacks aren't everything. It's not the ultimate indicator of how you're rushing the passer. But I think they have, of their nine games, I think six of them they have one or fewer sacks.
Right.
Either no sacks or one sack.
Yeah.
And the other three, they have five, six, and seven. So they're getting in bunches, but it's also like six games out of your nine games with only one sack or less.
That's
not good.
Right.
So they got to add something. It's nice that they added Bruce Irvin. Right. We'll see how much he has left in the tank. He played a little bit for the Seahawks last year.
Like
I'm just kind of waiting for
now, right?
an opportunity. Yeah, he's 36. He's going to skew their average age of the roster. Yeah, no doubt. I think the Lions are like the second youngest defense.
They're all like 24.
It's going to skew that a little bit. But they had to do something, so good on them for adding a piece. But I mean,
and maybe that is what like you said, you're playing against teams that aren't as good. And the thing that Campbell said today actually is true that. They get home. They don't get home a lot, but they do pressure the quarterback a lot. And they have had high number pressure games, a few times this season. Like Hutchinson, I still think is toward the top of the league.
He's third. Third pressures.
In individuals. But it's like, maybe you get Houston back. Maybe you can get some other guys rounding into shape, and then Irving give you something. But it's just like, I just look out there and I say, man, if you could put one guy who's a starting corner, who's got real starting experience in the mix, when you're down all these other dudes, you're not going to be panicking as much. I get the other side of it. It's like, hey, if we can get one more sack a game and get off the field, that's all we need. One more stop, which is true. Sometimes it's easier to just, like, cover better. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, the corner thing is what it is at this point.
It really is,
They're probably not adding another guy that can make an impact.
Right.
So it's like you just need your two dudes out there to kind of perform. So that's why I kind of point to the pass rush because, that they're streaky. Right, like they have solid depth, I think, but it's like no real second star next to Hutch.
Right.
A lot of these guys are hit or miss. Sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't.
Right.
I think Jeremy put this out, but Julian Okwara, Charles Harris, John Kaminsky, Josh Pascal, and Romeo Okwara have combined for just 4.5 sacks this season.
That's not
good enough.
You gotta get home.
It's really not. So they need James Houston back
badly.
They need a speed rusher opposite of Hutch.
And that's why he's not getting home.
Right.
Right.
He's getting held every play too.
There's
a play. Someone having a chokehold. It looked like Draymond Green out there.
Oh my god. Perfect. Oh my god.
So he needs some help. He's not getting it. I also think that he can do a better job of finishing some of those sacks.
Yeah, he can play better too.
So right now it's just not working. And when quarterbacks have all day to throw back there, it's not helping your corners that aren't the best, but they're doing what they can out there. So you just need more of this collective unit to play better, and it hasn't happened yet. But, we'll see the quarterbacks that they play the rest of the way. We've got Justin Fields, who looks like he's going to be back for this game. No Tyson Bagent, so.
I don't know if that's good or bad. Right. At this point.
So Justin Fields, they got Jordan Love on Thanksgiving. They've got maybe Derek Carr. I think he'll be back by then. He's injured right now, I guess. But either
or
Derek Carr or Jameis. So for the Saints game, they got Justin Fields again, December 10th. Then they've got Russell Wilson, who actually is playing all right.
Yeah.
Not the worst, but he's still Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josh Dobbs.
he's the best guy on the list so far.
Yeah, probably. and then Dak, and then Josh Dobbs again. So, not like a daunting
murderer's row
of quarterbacks there. So they should be able to bounce back and have some success. But, again, I just come back to they've had a chance to play some solid quarterbacks.
Yep.
The only quarterback that I've been impressed with how they've defended is Pat Mahomes, but he also didn't have Travis Kelce, which
it was a weird day.
It's not an excuse, but it's also you have to acknowledge that he didn't have his best weapon out there. So, we'll see. That'll be a question for January when that comes around, but something that's in the back of my mind for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that I don't know how else you couldn't think about it. One thing I wanted to touch on before we go into the next game here, and because Campbell did talk about him a little bit every week. Jameson Williams, of course, comes out and has the big block that we mentioned earlier on the big touchdown run. Mm-hmm. A couple blocks, I think, in this game. And actually had a nice touchdown that was called back that I'm still
that
not
was
sure.
Such a bad call.
If that, yeah, like I don't know what that call was about, but yeah. That was a nice play by him. But he actually made a really nice catch on a comeback that I thought was like one of his best catches of the year, if not the best catch we've seen him make. And it wasn't like a spectacular day for him or whatever. He had two catches on maybe just the two targets.
Yeah.
But Campbell said some today that I thought was interesting, where he said that finally, or maybe for the first time, that Jameson feels like one of the guys.
One of the guys.
One of the guys on the, like, he's just one of the 53 who does his job, shows up, gets the work, goes, you know, comes in the next day. And, like, that's all they've been asking for. So I don't know if him seeing Donovan come in here lights the fire, or if it was already lit, but, or if it's a mirage. but this was a productive day for him, and it needed to be. Next one needs to be two, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, it was an interesting one. We're not done there yet, I don't think with Jameson.
You picked a good day to come to Allen Park because this is the most positive I've heard the coaching staff talk about JMO.
Right.
So Campbell spoke today. Like you mentioned, he said he feels like one of the guys now. The more he earns his stripes here, the more opportunities he gets. Talked about his blocking.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's in a good place right now. He's improving. And he said he was proud of him for the way that he performed against the Chargers.
Yeah, man.
Campbell doesn't throw that around too often. Like, they're very careful the way they talk about JMO. They're just kind of like, well, he just needs to stack good days, and we'll see what happens from there. Like, they weren't giving us anything like a month ago.
Because he wasn't stacking any days.
He wasn't here to stack days. And now he's had a couple good practices, weeks of practices here. And so Campbell was very effusive with his praise today. Mm-hmm. Antoine Randall-El came out today and said, I think he was asked about, like, the positive plays he's been making and whether the production will follow as a receiver. And he said, I think it's coming. It's a matter of time. So you hear the way his own coaches are talking about him. Antoine was saying that he's becoming a selfless player. Like, when he gets those blocks, he's just pumped up. You see him just, like, flexing, like, right. after that block. Like, he's fired up for these other guys for scoring instead of him getting the ball. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the first time that he's been blocking like this for a while now, but it's, like, the praise that they're getting – that he's getting from the coaching staff and that they're giving to him. This is probably the first time I've heard it reach this level. And that tells me something. That tells me, all right, he might be turning a corner here. And if they're saying that breakout game is just around the corner, I'll believe them.
Right.
I think because that catch he made, I think it was over the middle or something like that. He was really good play.
It was a great catch. Yeah.
Probably one of his better catches of the season, or if not his best catch this year.
For like 12 yards.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, all right, you're coming along. The coaches are talking about you. You're out. The other thing that I think was pointed out today, Jamal was out there on the final drive.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, like he was out there. They trusted him in crunch time when they needed to make these plays and get down the field and score and tie a game. He was out there pretty much the whole time. And that, to me, also spoke volumes about how they feel he's coming along. So the light bulb might be finally on for Jameson Williams. We've been talking about it for a minute now.
Yeah.
It's still early. They've got to kind of work him in here more, but it seems like they're pretty pleased with his progress so far.
It feels a little bit like what they were hoping that would happen last year when they started to just inch him into games.
Yeah.
And then, like, slowly and whatever, they were hoping that maybe that would, and it never did. It never took off, never took on that way. And he never became part of the offense or part of anything that was happening other than, like, a gadget. And now he had to be, based on injuries and everything else, and it was almost like they had no choice. And sometimes that's what it takes to get somebody, you know, over the top. So maybe that's what we saw. I don't know. We got to see it again and again and probably every day for the rest of the year. But the other piece there who didn't play, Donovan Peoples-Jones did not play. He was a scratch, but he was not, I don't think, a healthy scratch. What else do we know about?
I think he had a rib injury.
A rib or something? What did they say anything today? I didn't hear much on him. I'm not sure what, or if he was out there or not. I don't know what's going on with him, if he'll be out there Sunday or not.
He's working back from something. I imagine they were probably just trying to catch him up to speed too, but we'll see. I mean, I think he'll be out there sooner rather than later.
Yeah, so we'll see on that one, of course, later in the week. But, of course, now the Lions move forward to another divisional game here with the Bears. As you said earlier, Colton, Justin Fields is expected to play. No Tyson Bagent. Campbell, was asked about how do you avoid letdowns and things like this, which I always have a hard time with in the NFL, because I'm like, if you've won 7 games or whatever and you're in a playoff hunt, that doesn't exist or shouldn't exist. So I don't know if that would be something I'd be overly concerned about, but at the same time, like, Chicago is a team that has nothing to lose at this point. I think that's what I would say. Their team, Fields, is in a situation where, okay, he's been out for a couple weeks. He's had to watch this guy who was a nobody from nowhere come in and win a game and play in some ways better than him in an offense that he was complaining about that said saying doesn't work. Suddenly, they've, you know, whatever. They've got some guys on the team, as Campbell mentioned today, DJ Moore, Khalil Herbert, some of these other players, who can play and who can make plays. And it's just like Fields is a guy that you're just waiting for. Is today going to be the day that he decides he's going to go nuts?
Yeah.
Like the game that they had against the Commanders early in the season, or I think the week before that, where they played somebody and lost and he just went off. And it's like, that could happen at any time, and you just don't really know. You have to be on guard for that, and I think that that's the right message to send this week. This is a good team. This is a dude who can, if you're not ready to go, and he just decides one day when he wakes up. So, yeah, I get that whole thing. Your thoughts on this one?
I mean, I think Justin Fields was playing some good ball before he got hurt.
I think so, too. It was iffy, up and down, but, yeah, he was getting there.
335 and four touchdowns against the Broncos. That defense is actually playing a lot better now in Denver, so... and then Washington, 282 and four touchdowns. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know if he was turning a corner. That the two-game sample size probably wasn't large enough to say that definitively, but he was playing some solid football before he got hurt. Now he comes back, and he was probably watching Tyson Bagent get some love in Chicago.
I have to think he saw that.
Because the thing in Chicago is, like, they'll praise any quarterback that comes in and plays well.
They want him starting.
Try to anoint whoever's starting as, like, the next guy.
Right.
So he probably saw some of that and was like, all right, this is my team. I got to get back out there. Right. Probably hears the Caleb stuff, too, down the road. So... I imagine he'll be motivated, and you know, even though the record isn't what they want it to be, like they've got some pieces now. I mean, they added Montez Sweat, they've got DJ Moore. You know, the offense and defense, they're not where they need to be, but they've got some dudes, as Campbell was saying today. And it's like, if you're not careful, you can lose a game like this. I mean, I think back to last year. I mean, no one probably thought the Lions could do what they did down the stretch, and I remember them playing a 7-2 Giants team and going to New York and winning that game.
You did say it because of the Caleb thing, and then also you're in Chicago and you're listening to every day about how people are like, well, we won with this other guy who supposedly sucks compared to Fields, so what's the problem here? And it's just like, you're down to, fair or unfair, he's down to his last chance, right? I think in Chicago. I don't think anyone said that. I don't think anyone's come out and openly whatever. I don't even know if it has to be said because, like, clearly, and they have been playing, they've been scrapping, I think I would say. They haven't been the most embarrassing team in the league. You know, I don't think they have. They've been scrapping and fighting, and they do play hard. Campbell's right about that. They didn't early in the season. But I think that in subsequent weeks, they picked that up. So they're trying. They're playing hard. There's some pride there. But at the same time, it's like Fields, it's like somebody's got to go to him and be like, dude, this is it. If it doesn't happen in the next month, you're done here. We are going to get the number one pick, and we're drafting Caleb Williams. Or... we're going to get the number two pick and draft Caleb Williams or Drake May, whatever it is. You know, like, you're not going to be here. So, like, this is it right now, and you got to do it. And it's just, he's the type of guy that's always fascinated me. There's a lot of players like this that come out of, he was a super recruit. He was, Justin Fields was the best recruit in the country by many classes. Oh, he was the best quarterback in his class and, like, the best one in the previous, like, three, prospect-wise. Everyone wanted him. He was, like, Mr. Whatever, right? Goes to Georgia, then goes to Ohio State. Got the waiver to transfer right when that wasn't a thing. This is a guy who's never really been told no, or you can't do something, or this isn't working, or you're losing, or this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Never, ever in his life. Like, he was at Georgia in the national championship game, goes to Ohio State, and they never lose. Mr. All-World athlete picks up a football and can throw it 100 yards without even blinking. Now he's at a point where we're going to find out.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, for young kids... okay, we find out really quick. They lose and they go away. We never hear from them again. And then sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes they say, screw it. I'm going to cut loose and let it rip.
Mm-hmm.
I would still be on alert for that happening. And I know people are probably laughing at that. But, like, I know he's played so horribly in stretches. But you know as well as I do. Like, I've seen that kid play for 7 years now or whatever. He can do this if he wants to.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just a matter of if he gets confidence, you're in trouble. And you can't do anything when he gets confidence. It's nothing that you did or didn't do. So the alert is... if he shows up on Sunday ready to play and prove to everybody that he's an NFL quarterback, we have to be ready to go because it's going to be a game. And I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I don't want to say he's, like, immature, but I do think he, like you mentioned, he hasn't really faced on-field adversity.
Never. Not one. This is it. Yeah.
This is it, right? Like, never lost before he got to the Bears and got to the NFL and had to have a taste of that and kind of learn how to grow with that. And I'm not sure if he's fully there yet, but...
hasn't shown it.
he hasn't shown it, and they haven't really surrounded him with much. But at the same time, like, it's make or break time, man. Like, you're year three in the league. Like, you got to prove something. And if you don't, this team that you're on has a couple of top five draft picks coming up, buddy. And
you're not going to be here.
You might not be here.
You're going to be an extra one that they trade for.
Yeah. Yep. And not just him. I mean, you got a head coach coaching for his job, probably. Yeah. So
maybe a GM.
Yeah. So there's probably a sense of urgency there all around. And when you're playing a team like that, you know, you never know what can happen. So the Lions absolutely should not overlook Justin Fields or the Bears. I mean, hell, Justin Fields almost single-handedly beat them last year in Chicago. That final was like 31-30. They were down, 24-14 at one point and had to march all the way back. So if they're not playing their A game, they can lose this one. So
yeah, I mean, I think the Lions themselves are almost like a good example for other teams. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're Chicago, why are you not saying, like, look at them, look what they did? Like, they were down and out dead.
I think they did. I think Fields mentioned the Lions back then, a couple weeks ago.
1-6, dead. Nobody cared. They thought they were trading their best player and quitting on the season, and they almost made the playoffs. Like, one day they just decided to show up and play better. And I have to assume, in this building, Campbell has said the same thing to them. Like, don't think for a second that they haven't looked at what we did and think, why can't we do the same thing?
Of all teams that should know, know better, it's probably this one because of what they did last year. I think that could... That's a good point.
And
that can help them.
And that's your motivating thing if you spin it forward. If you're Campbell, as you say, don't think for a second that they don't think that they can do the same thing you did, but now it's our chance to go prove to them that it's not that easy.
No doubt.
Like, this is a very different situation. We had to do a lot more than you think. So, yeah, a divisional game, the whole shot. These are never rollover games. I just don't know any other way to say that one. I mean, the Bears are in a weird spot, and it could be a rollover game if it doesn't go well in the first couple of series, but it also, like, if you let them mess around, it could be one that's not very fun for some people there.
A team with nothing to lose can be scary at times, and that's...
Especially in your own division.
In your own division, there's going to be a motivating factor there. So this is a game that the Lions should win. Like, I'm not saying they're...
Right.
They're underdogs all of a sudden.
They have reason to be a little tight on that one.
Just a little bit, yeah. And you want to... Especially coming off an emotional game like that, where you're winning off a game-winning field goal, you don't want that let down. So I understand why there's some of that talk this week, but... Same time, the Lions are the better team, and they should get it done.
Really big take care of business game this week, and really the rest of the way, because that last one was a big one. You had to get that, because you could look at all the winnable games going forward and say, well, if you can do that, you're going to be in really good shape. Well, now it's like, you got to know, now you got to go win the winnable games. And I think that's sometimes easier said than done, all the way through.
No doubt.
All right, you got anything else this week before we get on here?
No, I'm all good.
I think we're good this week. That we're going to go in the locker room today, see what else happens. It's like 60 degrees outside. It's like getting hot in
it's
here.
It's a great
it's
day.
Like, we're right now, but in any event, I think that'll wrap it up for this week. Thanks, for everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for some stuff from Colton later in the week. Of course, we'll be there on Sunday to wrap up Lions-Bears. In the meantime, be good to each other, and we'll talk to you again next week.